And welcome back to Midday, everyone. Dan Roderick's here. Thanks again for joining us for the second hour of today's show. We're a week away from primary day, as I've mentioned, so we thought we'd look at some of the more interesting and hotly contested campaigns across Maryland, races for county council, Maryland's state senate, the House of Delegates, as well as county executive races are all heating up as Election Day approaches. So we're going to look at what's going on here in the Baltimore region, take a swing out to Western Maryland, at least Frederick County, and see what's going on there. Frederick County having its first election for county executive. Its first ever county executive will be elected this year. And we'll also talk a little bit about the Eastern Shore, Anne Arundel County, the executive's race there as well. Joining me to help us through this hour, I'm so glad to have him here with us, Barry Raskovar of PoliticalMaryland.com and Len Lazarick of MarylandReporter.com. Nice to see you both here, guys.
Hey, thanks.
Always a pleasure.
Barry Raskovar goes back watching Maryland politics to the 1970s, where he's a reporter for the Baltimore Sun, later editorial writer.
Yes, right? I can remember President Lincoln coming through town.
On the train.
Yes.
Yeah, very good. He's one of the few reporters who knew he was going through town because it was a big secret.
There was President-elect Lincoln.
And what about Len? Where does that leave Len? He was here, what?
I started in
Lord Baltimore. 75. Was in charge of things when you were here.
Yeah, Leonard. Yeah. I'm named after.
That's right, Leonard.
Leonard Calvert.
Len, nice to have you. Nice to have you with us. We got so much ground to cover, so I'm going to start right away with Barry in Baltimore County. An interesting race for state senate there, in the wake of redistricting in Baltimore County. Incumbent Senator Jim Brochin facing a challenge from a former delegate, right? Connie DeJulius.
Right. She's a former delegate from way back. Mm-hmm. And at that time, it was Connie Galeazzo, and she represented Dundalk.
And she ran, I think, 1990, you're talking about, something like that, right?
Yes. And now she's trying to make a comeback. Her husband is in the O'Malley administration. He was a labor leader, and now he's handling that within the O'Malley administration. The problem there is that Dundalk is a long way from the new district lines, which is really Andy Harris's old North County, rural Baltimore County district. Jim Brochin, who is an incumbent, had his district redrawn. He was gerrymandered out of his old district into this new, much more conservative district. Brochin's former district represented the middle part of the county, Towson and parts of Lutherville and Cockeysville. And it was the type of district where you could do a lot of retail politicking, door-to-door. And Brochin is excellent at that and loves doing it. This new district, you're going from farm to farm. You can't walk it very well. So it's been a real transition for him. And at the same time, Senate President Mike Miller helped arrange for this new district because he and Brochin don't get along whatsoever. Connie DeJulius has all this labor support, and it's been a real Donnybrook so far.
And Brochin likes to use the fact that he votes against the O'Malley administration or the Democratic leadership in Annapolis as part of his campaign pitch to people, that he's a Democrat but an independent thinker.
But I would say that two-thirds of the district Brochin has represented, and Towson, which was carved out as a single-member delegate district. What they did in the last redistricting was create these single-member districts that Democrats could easily win. And so he has a good part of the district. He lost some Pikesville precincts that were very good for him.
Mm-hmm. But gained this whole rural area, too, right? The North County.
Yeah. Miller would say, and he told me earlier this year, that you know, he thinks a Democrat can still win the district. And DeJulius, you would argue, is too is to the left of Brosian, and as Barry pointed out, has, you know, significant labor support.
Well, if a big chunk of that new district had been represented by Andy Harris before,
yes.
It was the most one of the most conservative members of the U.S. Congress now,
yes.
representing the first district, wouldn't that seem to lead you to a Republican candidate here in this district?
Well, we'll find out in November, but Brosian has proven to be an excellent campaigner. And others have tried to unseat him in the past and have not succeeded. And I think you have to put your money on the incumbent here. Although it's been a real battle. They've gone at it tooth and nail.
So there's one to keep your eye on. District 42 in Baltimore County. Len Lazarick and Barry Raskovar joining me in this hour of the show. Now we're joined by Allison Nezovich, who covers Baltimore County government for the Baltimore Sun, my colleague from Calvert Street, to talk about the county council races. This is really interesting again this year. Allison, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Dan. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. I mean, it was only the last election where there was quite a bit of turnover in the county council. And now we're looking at what, Allison? Four of the council's seven members are in some serious primary battles.
Yeah. The last election had seen a lot of change. There are five newcomers, and it's a seven-member council. This year, there's four of the members are in primary battles, and one longtime councilman is leaving after four terms.
Okay, and so who's facing who here? Why don't we go over each of these quickly? Let's start with, Kathy Bevins, an incumbent. What's she up against?
Okay, yeah, Kathy Bevins is the chairwoman of the council this year. She represents, she's from Middle River, and she was elected in the last election. She's facing a man named Jeff Beard. He's a General Motors employee. He's a representative for United Auto Workers. Hmm. They're having a pretty tough battle against each other. Do you want me to go to the next district?
Yeah, the next one would be, let's slip, that's the sort of eastern, southeastern side of the county. How about go the other direction? Let's go over to Ken Oliver's district over on the west side.
Okay, so Ken Oliver has been in for three terms, I believe. There's two people challenging him in the Democratic primary. Julian Jones, who's a firefighter or division chief in Anne Arundel County, and also a woman named Makita Scott. Hmm. Julian Jones had challenged Oliver in the last election and lost to him by only 98 votes.
Yeah, I noticed that. It's 2010, the margin was 98 votes. So they're facing off again, Oliver and Julian Jones. Let's see. Let's pick another district here. Let's go out to Pikesville and parts of Owings Mills for that district, now represented by Vicki Almond, right?
Yeah, that'll be another rematch of sorts in that. In the last election, Vicki Almond ran against a man named John Herbst, who's an attorney there, and he was a Republican at the time, and they competed in the general election, but he has since switched parties, so now they're in a primary battle in the Democratic primary this year.
I love the intrigue. Intrigue in local county races. Well, very good.
But it gets even better, as Allison can tell you, as to let the listeners know, Allison, as to who is endorsing whom in that race.
Yeah, so a county executive candidate has endorsed John Herbst, and he has not gotten along with Vicki Almond over her term the past few years. So the county executive has endorsed all the other Democratic incumbents on the county council except for her.
What are the disagreements about? What leads to this? Are there specific issues out there in Pikesville and Owings Mills that led to this disagreement and shifting his endorsement?
I think there's been a number of things they've butted heads on over the past couple years. There's been some labor legislation that they've disagreed on. There's been some development issues also. And they just haven't gotten along. I don't know if it's their personalities or you know, a personal thing between them. But they have not gotten along.
Okay. Now we've got a Republican member of the council, Todd Huff, who's up in the north part of the county. He's actually from Lutherville, but this is the middle section of the county, I guess. And he's facing a challenge from Wade Koch, a name I recognize from the Maryland legislature.
Yeah, Delegate Catch has been in the legislature for, I think, like 40 years, and he's challenging Huff. That's a really large district, although it's largely rural, goes all the way up to the Pennsylvania line.
Well, this is a pretty interesting. I just want to ask Barry about this. In the past years, I remember when county council races were pretty snoring. I mean, there wasn't much going on there. There was very little challenge, and now we've seen, you know, 5 seats were taken by newcomers the last time. There's possible turnover this time. So,
yeah,
does it tell
it
you
is,
about, is the county changing or what's going on?
It's difficult to tell what's going on, but you're absolutely right. It used to be that whoever was the incumbent was virtually guaranteed 4 more years in the council. Now they're much more competitive. The Todd Huff and Wade Koch race is especially interesting because Koch was essentially gerrymandered out of his district. It became a 2-member district with 3 incumbents, and Koch decided to take on Todd Huff, who has had a series of ethics problems on the council. You go out in that district, and there are just tons of Koch signs. So it's going to be fascinating to see how that one comes out on the Republican side.
Allison, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Okay, Allison Nezovich from The Sun, who's covering that election, the primary for Baltimore County Council. And one more thing about the Baltimore County, Len Lazarick, John Olszewski is the senior, is leaving the county council. But his son is
Johnny O. Senior, as we say in Dundalk, on is Johnny O. Senior and Johnny O. Junior.
Yeah.
And Johnny O. Junior even though he probably got the seat initially, is an excellent politician, a very smart guy.
He's member of the House of Delegates, right?
Yeah, he was a teacher. He's getting his PhD in public policy from UMBC. But typical of kind of Dundalkian politics has created a slate with himself. He's running for the Senate because Norman Stone finally, after 52 years, the longest serving member of the Maryland legislature, is leaving. And Johnny O is running for that seat. He does have both Democratic and Republican competition, but establishes a slate with Mike Weir, an incumbent delegate. But there are 2 open delegate seats, which is why we have like 20 people of both parties. As people should know, you know, Dundalk is a relatively conservative Democratic area, and that's the kind of politicians that used to represent it.
Reagan Democrats.
If you want to say, but they were Reagan Democrats before Reagan.
That's right.
They were conservative Democrats. As
so 20 Republican and Democrats vying for three
open seats, technically.
Three delegate seats.
Delegate seats, but there are 2 open seats. There's an incumbent delegate, Mike Weir Jr., whose father was a delegate. I mean, they believe in family values down there.
One of the interesting elements here is that a member of the Johnny O. Jr. team this campaign is an African-American, Eric Washington, which indicates the growing strength that comes from Turner Station and also has been seeping into other parts of eastern Baltimore County.
Because it includes Essex as well.
There's a growing Hispanic community there and a growing African-American community. Consequently, Johnny O. Jr. has placed Eric Washington on the ticket. It's going to be interesting to see, you know, who wins those 2 open seats.
That is interesting. And, of course, Johnny Jr. is running for the Senate seat.
Yes, right? And that's pretty much a given.
Right, okay. Barry Raskevar of PoliticalMaryland.com and Len Lazarick, editor and publisher of MarylandReporter.com, joining us in this hour of midday. We'll take our break here, and then we'll move on to Baltimore City, Harford County, Anne Arundel County, Frederick County, all during this hour of midday politics here on Candidates Week on WYPR. A short break. We'll be right back. Hey, welcome back to Midday. Midday Politics this hour. Dan Roderick's here with Barry Raskovar and Len Lazarick as we're looking at some of the more interesting local and district legislative races in Maryland. It'll be decided on Election Day, primary Election Day, June 24th, the earliest election in Maryland. We're not used to this, so we'll see what the turnout's like. What did you make of the numbers that came out, by the way, on the early voting, like 46,000 plus as of last Thursday, I think?
If you look at the early voting 4 years back, we're ahead of where we were then, and we'll probably end up with a greater number of people voting early, and on a percentage basis too, but not by much. 4 years ago, early voting accounted for less than 2.5% of the vote.
Okay.
This time, it may get all the way up to 3.5%.
Okay.
So it's still a very small part.
But we're already approaching about 4% of Democrats. Almost three-quarters of the early voters have been Democrats, and we're up to 71,000 there. So
you had an interesting story in MarylandReporter.com quoting Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown on the idea of independents voting in the primaries in the future.
Yes, he said he was open to the idea. I don't know whether that means I won't oppose a bill if it comes in. I think it would have a hard time in the legislature. He was pressed on this by C4 Clarence Mitchell on a radio interview. And, you know, the unaffiliates, only as of last night, out of that 71,000, only 951 unaffiliated voters voted because they essentially have nothing to vote for except school board in most counties.
Yeah, well, that proposal is going to run into probably a brick wall from Senate President Miller.
Yeah,
because he wants Democratic primaries to be the sole custody of Democratic voters. It's fine if independents want to vote in Republican primaries with the Senate president, but I think he's going to be very protective of that, and I think the lieutenant governor is trying to be polite to the host on that radio show.
I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but you have to actually change the state law to allow this to happen, or can the party vote to allow it to happen? Could Republicans or Democrats?
You have to change the state law to allow
unaffiliated.
Republicans did it once, but just for one election, I think 98.
Okay, so Republicans did it, but the legislature had to accede to that?
Is that how it works? They had to pass a law
for a particular election.
All right.
Let's go back to this election, 2014, the primary. Another interesting place to look in Baltimore City in a race for a Senate seat, Joan Carter Conway, of course, the incumbent. And it was interesting to hear Bill Henry, Baltimore County Councilman, announce that he was going to run for that seat, Barry.
Right. People are still wondering why Bill Henry was going to challenge Joan Carter Conway. She's pretty entrenched in that seat. She's a committee chair, which gives her a lot of clout in the state legislature and with the governor. But Bill Henry, since he's been a member of the council, has tried to shake things up. He's a very proactive councilman. He's tried to create coalitions to push proposals, progressive proposals that the mayor may not like. And I think, you know, he's trying to make his mark, and I doubt that he'll be able to be successful this time. But with such a low turnout expected in the voting, you never can tell.
Another place to look in Baltimore City, this is pretty interesting, and as a result of redistricting, as Len was talking about, a single delegate district, but here's one in Baltimore City, District 44.
Yes.
And you end up with three, am I right, three incumbent delegates running for this one seat.
Correct.
Explain this one for us.
Baltimore City had to lose seats in the legislature because of their loss of population compared with the surrounding counties. So that in this particular district, it's one of the few where the Court of Appeals allowed a split district in which Baltimore County was given two of the delegate seats and Baltimore City got one. So you end up with Melvin Stukes, who used to be in the city council.
City council, right.
Keith Haynes, who's an incumbent delegate, and Kiefer Mitchell, who also was in the city council. running against one another. Kiefer Mitchell is by far the best funded and has gotten a lot of endorsements, and he's become a rising star in the House of Delegates. If he is able to win this time and stick around, it would not surprise me to see him in a key leadership position in the not-too-distant future. But first, he's got to win.
That's the 44th district, the new
44A.
44A. I want to slip over to the 45th district with you, Barry, just for a minute here, where we have incumbent Senator Nathaniel McFadden facing a challenge from Julius Henson.
Yes, and we, again, because of the low turnout, we don't know how this is going to end up after the votes are counted. McFadden, though, has the East Baltimore Democratic Organization, the EDO. You know, it's almost a machine over there. He will get his people out to vote. And in a low turnout election, that should be enough. But you never know with Julius Henson. He's spending an awful lot of money on this campaign.
Julius Henson was, of course, convicted of conspiracy to violate election laws in connection with the robocall from 2010 on Election Day 2010. Made as part of Bob Ehrlich's campaign to unseat Martin O'Malley unsuccessfully, of course, that year. So he's been through that, and he's been through subsequent court sessions with a certain judge in the Baltimore Circuit Court about his activities.
And been able to change his sentencing. I mean, Julius got screwed in the sentencing. I mean, the guy that authorized it got house arrest, and Julius Henson, who did the dirty work, got jail.
We should mention that. That's Paul Shurick you're referring to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Who was the other defendant in that case.
Right. Yeah. Right. And actually authorized the robocalls.
Okay. So, okay, I think we've covered the Baltimore City, the interesting parts in Baltimore City. Sitting judges running for election in Baltimore City.
Well, there, there is a challenge there from Paige Kreuter, who is an insurgent. She's run before. She's trying it again. Because her name starts with a C and the judges are listed alphabetically, she does have a shot because people don't pay much attention to that. The sitting judges have put together a ticket and spent a lot of money trying to get people to understand vote for the sitting judges and not for the first name you see on the list.
You're listening to Midday, Midday Politics. Dan Roderick's here along with Barry Raskovar of PoliticalMaryland.com and Len Lazarick, editor and publisher of MarylandReporter.com. We're going to be joined now by Rima Rahman from the Capital Gazette to talk about Anne Arundel County and the county executive's primary down there with two Republicans, the incumbent Laura Newman, facing a challenge from State Delegate Steve Hsu. Rima, thank you very much for joining us here on Midday.
Thank you, Dan.
So you've had a series of debates. The latest one was last Friday, I believe. Could you just tell us what this campaign has been like for those who are just catching up, just tuning in now because the primary is a week away? What has this campaign been like, the challenge to Laura Newman by Steve Hsu?
Well, the campaigns have sort of picked up steam in the last few weeks. Sort of a lot of knocking back and forth between the two in terms of their records in office and sort of defending who is the more Republican candidate. There's a lot of support, I think, behind both candidates, either for Laura Newman because they think, you know, she came in and is doing a good job and the county is running smoothly, and others support Steve Hsu because he's been around for a while and they commend him for his experience. But there's been a lot of negative campaigning actually happening in that race in the last couple of weeks, and we expect it to pick up in the next few days as we get closer to the primary.
This is very interesting. Laura Newman, of course, came in as county executive after the conviction of John Leopold in Anne Arundel County Circuit Court. And, you know, it was seen, I think, Barry and Len, as a person who came in and cleaned things up or stabilized the county government's leadership. So I wonder, where does the challenge from Hsu come from?
The challenge is that Hsu had been planning to run
anyway
before this all came, it blew up in Leopold's face. And Hsu is an ideological conservative, and he is challenging the credentials of Laura Newman, She used to work for, of all things, a Democrat in Howard County, which, you know, isn't what a true Republican would do. That's the line from Hsu and his followers. And
well, she worked in economic development in Howard County.
Yes. Well, and she also won her appointment with the votes of three of the Democrats on the Anne Arundel County Council. Three Democrats and a Republican are the one that pushed her over the top.
Right.
So it really is the question of who's the real Republican. She didn't vote in Republican primaries, whatever. He has over 100 people who have endorsed him, including Bob Ehrlich, who sent out a personal letter to people there. It's very... It's not quite as ideological, though, as some other races. It's really a question of which one. They're both claiming they are the conservative Republican
in the race. So, Arima, so based on what Barry and Leonard are saying, it sounds like maybe a bunch of Republicans were lined up to endorse Hsu this go-round anyway. They were anticipating that he was going to run for county executive.
Yeah, that's correct. A lot of people have been behind him for quite some time. And the interesting part is that when Laura Newman came along, some of those people, not many, but some of those people actually broke off and joined her campaign. And I think that sort of that underlying contention, I think, is becoming quite visible in this campaign. And in terms of trying to defend on who is the more Republican, it seems like their campaign tactics are to sort of paint the other one as a liberal. You know, he has gone after her for not voting in primaries and not being part of, not being very active in the Republican Party before she took office. But she has gone after him quite a bit on voting on, you know, Governor O'Malley's budget. And even so much as sending out a recent mailer where Steve Hsu is painted as a portrait drawn in the likeness of Shepard Fairey's Barack Obama hope portrait. So there's a lot of going back and forth and trying to line each other with the Democrats, while also at the same time defending their, you know, that they are fiscally conservative Republicans.
Rima, I have a question about the stormwater fee or the so-called rain tax, because it would seem to me that's a place where Republicans would really fight over who was more opposed to it than the other one. And that, I'm sure that came up in debates.
Yes, it has. And Laura Newman has repeated, you know, her veto of the stormwater bill on the county level and has gone after Delegate Hsu because he voted in favor of the state bill that mandated the 10 largest jurisdictions to implement that program. So there's been a lot of back and forth on that, too.
I bet. What was that? The last debate Friday night, your story said that they were a little more pleasant in the debate.
Yeah, they were. They sort of got much softer questions, at least in the second half of the debate. And there, you know, the same sort of issues came up in the first half, but it was a little bit of a different setup. It was you know, a debate in a lecture hall at Anne Arundel Community College. It was quite small. And it's a little bit different. The first two debates were definitely more intense than Friday's was.
Any other questions for Rima before we let her go, Barry or Len?
Rima, what's the general election outlook?
Well, it'll be interesting to see, depending on who comes out of this primary. So there's an uncontested Democratic candidate, George Johnson, who has a very long history in the county. It'll depend. I think if Steve Hsu comes out the winner, I think the general election will probably fall more in line, more along party lines. But if Laura Newman takes it, it could be a closer race. I mean, Anne Arundel County is a Republican-led county, but there are more registered Democratic voters here who tend to vote conservative in the general elections.
And the county council members who voted for Laura Newman to make her county executive, are they all still supporting her?
I would say for the most part. So there were three Democrats and one Republican into the office. I know the Republican councilman has come out and endorsed her. The three Democrats, though, haven't made any sort of official announcements of support for her campaign.
I forgot for a moment what Lynn said about the three Democrats voting her as county executive, and that's being held against her now by her opponent.
And Newman has been using this rain tax as a club against a shoe for over a year now, because he was the only Republican in the House to actually vote for the bill twice. And he says, well, the bill that passed didn't make you do the kind of, fee tax that you imposed. And Newman just wants to kind of disregard that. That is the fact of the matter. But she did veto the original one.
And it's interesting to note that the council did override her veto.
Right.
Yes.
Thank you, Barry. And thank you, Rima. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Yep. Rima Raman from the Capitol talking about the Anne Arundel County executive's race. And when we get back after this break on Midday Politics, we'll talk about the Frederick County executive's race. Unprecedented, the first time they've had one. Cliff Cumber, right? Cliff Cumber will be joining us from the Frederick News Post. That'll be happening. And then we got to talk about Harford County, a Senate race up there. And also an interesting Republican trying to out-conservative another Republican in Carroll, Frederick County. When we get back here on Midday Politics, a short break. Hey, we're back and continuing our look at interesting primaries across the state, legislative races, local races, with Barry Raskevar of PoliticalMaryland.com and Len Lazarek, who is editor and publisher of Maryland Reporter. .com. But you guys do a great job. Thank you very much again, because we always got to check in to see what Barry's writing about. And Len's website, MarylandReporter.com, just full of great information about Maryland state government, the legislature, and, of course, the politics in Maryland every day. And it includes that great roundup of news, of political and government news from around the state that Cynthia Prairie does for you every day.
Absolutely. Yeah, all those wonderful links to YPR segments.
Yeah, yeah, right.
When we can find them on your webpage.
Thank you very much. Yeah, bring that up with the tech guy, would you? Okay, let's talk to Cliff Cumber. Cliff is joining us again here on Midday. He's editorial page editor of the Frederick News Post. Cliff, how you doing?
I'm good, Don. How are you?
Good. It's nice to hear from you again. And this is interesting because the charter changed out there in Frederick County. We now have... You're going to have your first county executive. So in order to get there, you have to have an election. So set this up for us, Cliff. What's going on?
Well, yep, we're moving over to a charter form of government, mirroring several other county governments in that we're going to be electing a county executive and seven council members in the coming election. So naturally, it's pretty much a big unknown for us at the moment. How this is all going to shake out. But one thing we are certain of is that this is a really quite hotly contested primary, and certainly as we move into November, it's going to be an even more hotly contested general election.
So what's the primary look like?
Well, so the primary for county executive features two figures who are well-known in Frederick County politics, perhaps not necessarily outside of the state. As the main candidates, we have Jan Gardner, who's running unopposed for the Democrats. She's a former county commissioner, former county commissioner's president. She stepped away for 4 years or so to work for Senator Barbara Mikulski as her Western Maryland representative, and now she's back challenging for the county executive spot. On the Republican side, perhaps the best-known candidate is Commissioner's President Blaine Young. He is a pretty conservative Republican in the Tea Party mold. He is being challenged in the Republican primary by two gentlemen, David Gray, who is also a commissioner, and Ralph Swedner, who is pretty much unknown but has stuck his hat in the ring.
Mark Swedner, S-W-E-A-D-N-E-R. He's a Frederick County resident. So those are the three Republicans. Blaine Young, who the county... commissioner, president of the board of the county commissioners, and also a talk show host who thought about running for governor this year, and county commissioner David Gray. And those two have been at odds quite a bit, have they not, Gray and Young?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, they're both Republicans, but I don't think you could find two people with any more mutually exclusive views. David Gray is you know, part of the contention between Blaine and David is that David is not really a Republican in any sense of the word, that he actually votes, his tendencies are more akin to the Democratic Party, you know, whereas Blaine Young very much has the super conservative side of the race sewn up. So, yeah, they have pretty much been contesting just about everything, mostly in Frederick County. This is to do with, you know, development and growth, which is Blaine Young is very, very pro-development, and David Gray comes from a much slower growth or, you know, limited growth perspective.
There's one thing I want to ask you about here. I've been receiving some communications from concerned citizens in Frederick County about Citizens Care and Rehabilitation Center, the Montague Assisted Living Center. This is a county-operated, county-owned facility out there that the county is considering selling. Is that correct? And is this an issue in the county executive's campaign?
Oh, yeah. This is going to be a big issue, I think, a moratorium on how Frederick County wants to treat its elderly. Just to give you a bit of background, Montague and Citizens are distinct care homes. Citizens is a for-profit center. Montague is for the indigent and homeless seniors who don't have anywhere to go at the end of their life. So basically, it's more than just considering the sale. They're actually moving ahead on transitioning the centers to under private ownership of a company called Aurora. And this has caused a huge amount of controversy, opposition in the county. There's a lot of people very upset that this is being sold. So, yeah, it is a very contentious point right at the moment. And certainly it's going to be a huge issue in this coming campaign.
Okay. Well, on those three Republicans, Cliff, where do they come down on that particular issue? I'm just curious about that.
I believe Blaine Young is the only person who is actively supporting the sale. And the other two, Mr. Swedner and David Gray, are clearly opposed to selling it, as is former Commissioner Jan Gardner on the opposite end.
So, okay.
Basically, there's only one person, I think, who is fully supporting this and is pushing it through.
I raise that issue because I always find it interesting. You know, senior citizens are very active voters, especially in primaries, low turnout. Such an issue could make the difference there, Cliff. Dan's going to end that with a question mark. I mean,
it's so much is up in the air with this particular race and all the candidates that are involved in it. I couldn't tell you. I'm pretty sure that the employees of the home and potentially the people in both of the centers, if they are active and capable of voting, I think if anything. This is certainly an issue that will drive them out to the polls.
Well, thank you very much, Cliff.
You're welcome. Yeah, nice to be on the show.
Yeah, we'll keep our eyes open for that in 1 week from today. That's Cliff Cumber, who is the editorial page editor of the Frederick News Post, who joins us here on Midday from time to time to talk about the news in Frederick County and the first county executive's race. Any comment from you guys on this, or should we move on?
Well, Frederick County is a fascinating jurisdiction right now.
Yeah.
The Ron Young dynasty is part of it. Just within the Young family, you have Liberal Democrats
yes,
and Tea Party Republicans.
Say, Ron Young was once the mayor of Frederick, right?
Longtime mayor of Frederick.
Yeah, and he's very, very different views than his son,
yes,
Blaine
and
Young. Yeah.
And Ron Young's wife is a classic
Karen Young,
a classic Liberal Democrat, as opposed to Blaine Young, who's a classic Tea Party Republican.
Right. Speaking of this, along
and
those lines,
Brad Young, who's running for the school board.
Which one?
Brad
Young?
Yeah. For re-election to the school board.
Here's another interesting story that's it partly involves Frederick County and Carroll County. This is State Senator David Brinkley, who is considered an establishment Republican, who's been around for quite a while, facing a challenge from somebody who claims to be more conservative than David Brinkley is.
Yes. Well, this is just part of the Tea Party revolution within the Republican Party. And, David Brinkley is what is now called a moderate conservative Republican. He is in a minority leadership position for the second time, I believe.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And he's being portrayed as someone who has betrayed the party by Mike Huff, who is a delegate, first-term delegate, who... was an acolyte of former Senator Alex Mooney, who's now going to be Congressman Alex Mooney from West Virginia. But it's just a classic inside the Republican Party fight between the far right and what is now, I guess, the middle road type of Republican.
He's facing a challenge from a state delegate, Michael Huff, who is 20 years the junior of David Brinkley at 34 years of age, who calls Brinkley a liberal Republican. I'll quote here Michael Dresser's story in The Sun. He said that description, liberal Republican, would come as a surprise to Annapolis insiders who have seen Brinkley speak and vote against most of the high-profile initiatives of Governor O'Malley. Brinkley's record is conservative enough to have earned him the support of the National Federation of Independent Businesses, Maryland Right to Life, and the Maryland Farm Bureau. And so, and Huff's attack is that he's a liberal Republican. So there's another interesting primary that we'll be watching.
And that type of primary is going to tell us a lot about the internal workings of the Republican Party and, you know, how far to the right it is moving.
Let's go to Harford County now. Lynn Lazarick, I'll turn to you on this one. You had a story from Jeremy Bauer-Wolf contributing to MarylandReporter.com. A story with the headline, Campaign for Harford County's Senate Seat Turns Nasty.
Yeah, so we have on the Democratic side, this is the seat that has been held by Republican Senator Nancy Jacobs. And there was some redistricting there. It probably made it a little bit more Democratic. And on the Democratic side, we have longtime delegate Mary Delaney James. Her first name is Mary hyphen Delaney James. Quite a point of confusion for a lot of people, and not spelled like Delaney Valley either. Right. No E. Yeah. Running against former Senator Art Helton. And they both have negative websites against each other. The Helton site is called the Mary Delaney James Gang site, and I'm hard pressed to recall what really the substantive difference is here. But the question again is who is the real Democrat? Helton has run before for this seat, and
he's a former senator. Right? I remember when he was in the legislature, Barry.
He's a former senator.
32 years ago.
32 years ago was the last time he was in?
Yes, he's run six times since then, and he's lost six times.
I didn't realize that. I didn't realize he had run six times.
Yes.
Okay. And he's running the same?
I don't think we even had that in the story that he's run six times.
Is it the same seat? The 34th district?
Well, there's been so much gerrymandering. Okay. I mean, there was a dispute.
The configuration of the seat has changed.
In which Helton, for a while, was disqualified by the election board because he didn't live in the district.
Oh, and then he proved that he had an address in Aberdeen or something.
Correct.
Right?
Okay. Correct. But this is not the Helton district from 32 years ago.
Okay. So... I'm sorry,
and with Blake. and with the story, it was interesting as I was again looking for pictures to illustrate it. So there, I have a picture of Mary Delaney with Senate President Mike Miller, and then I found a picture of Art Helton with Senate President Mike Miller at a similar event.
But it's interesting that I don't think there's any doubt as to who Senate President Mike Miller wants to win this race. Would it be Mary Delaney James? He looked upon her father, William S. James, who was a longtime Senate president and an icon in Annapolis. He has a building named
state
after him.
Treasurer as well.
He
right?
was also state treasurer for three terms.
Yeah.
She is heavily supported by Mike Miller, who can throw a lot of money into this campaign. But both sides have a lot of money, and they're using it.
And I saw another photograph, I think, with Marvin Mandel, former Governor Marvin Mandel.
Actually, they were lined up. Yeah. They were in the same photograph, Marvin Mandel.
Tell me just a little bit about Art Helton.
Well, he was a very loud state senator.
Was that his costume? Or
he often was at odds with the leadership. And would be bombastic on the Senate floor,
mm-hmm.
And I don't think that Senate President Miller wants that type of person in the Senate right now. But beyond that, Mary Delaney James is extremely bright. She's a very good lawyer. She's on the House Appropriations Committee now.
And has been a subcommittee chairman there for some time.
And I think there's no doubt if she gets in the Senate, Senate President Miller is going to try to elevate her into leadership rapidly.
Barry and Len, any other races you have your eye on? Anything else you'd like to mention in the time we have remaining?
Yes.
Eastern Shore, maybe?
Eastern Shore, the Richie Colburn, Addie Eckhart race is a fascinating one. I don't want to go into the divorce scandal that has been publicized throughout that as far as Richie Colburn is concerned, but he's the longtime incumbent senator. He has run into a marital problem. He has some ethics problems as well. Addie Eckhart is a very popular longtime delegate from that Middle Shore district. How that race comes out, I don't know, because they're both well known in most of that district,
and had run together as a ticket as well.
Hmm.
But it was a very messy divorce. But now, Alma Colburn is supporting Rich's re-election. Although she was encouraged actually to run for the seat herself.
That was his wife.
Yeah, his wife.
Len, I just wanted to ask you here, because we don't get you here as often as Barry comes in. What's your sense of how things are going to go on Tuesday? You think low turnout? What do you think? And do you expect any surprises?
Well, we've all been saying low turnout. I mean, that we're getting higher turnout for the early voting than I would have suspected. The weekend was a dud, but it really picked up again yesterday. More people voted yesterday than voted for together on Saturday and Sunday. It's going to be, traditionally we've only had about 25% turnout for primaries. So I'm suspecting around 20%, but it's like, you know, all these candidates have to get their people out. That's the key question.
After that, we don't have much time, but I was just going to say, after the Virginia primary, the congressional primary last week with Cantor losing, I don't close any doors. I keep my mind completely open as to possibilities here.
What if it rains on Tuesday? Who benefits? Are we going to have a shocker like Eric Cantor? This race is the most unpredictable I can ever remember.
Certainly turned out to be far more interesting than I ever thought it would be. And then you add all these local races, too. A lot to look forward to here on Tuesday and primary day. Make sure you vote June 24th. Barry Raskovar of PoliticalMaryland.com. Thank you again for being here, Barry.
Thank you.
And look for a link to Barry's latest column at MarylandReporter.com, which publishes Barry's column. Len Lazarick is the editor and publisher there. Thank you again for being with us.
Thanks.
And we return tomorrow. Midday Candidates Week continues tomorrow with both hours devoted to the Attorney General candidates on the Democratic side. The Republican candidate is unopposed. So we're devoting 2 hours tomorrow, giving time to Aisha Braveboy, Brian Frosch, and John Cardin. That's from 12 to 2 tomorrow, as usual, right here on Midday. Thanks for tuning in. Have a great afternoon, and see you on Wednesday.
Midday senior producer is Nikki Gamer. The producer and director is Jonathan Ahrens. The associate producer, Michael Himowitz. Our interns are Brian Gilbert, Tyler Downey, and Anna Muckerman. Music produced by Jeff Truman and High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcast and live streaming available at WYPR.org. Dan Roderick's column appears in the Baltimore Sun. This is WYPR, your NPR news station.